Step 24. Fear not death, accept it. Live life. From the ego's opinions come its considerations and needs. From its considerations and needs come all the contradictions of life. Because it has considerations and needs, the ego can be contradicted. Contradictions create anguish and emotional upset. Perhaps by now you've had a chance to read the booklet that comes with this program, Weight Loss for the Mind. In that booklet, I discuss how you can, by changing your expectancy, having less opinions, by working on your emotions and desires, you can eliminate 90% of all the anguish in your life. Of course, the central anguish we all have to eliminate is the fear of death. When you see people walking down the street, they are perpetually concerned about death. Most people have one or two death thoughts every hour of their waking life. It's not actually physical death necessarily, the act of leaving the earth plane, but as I said before, it's the death of things that scares them. Death of a relationship, death of a rhythm, that sort of stuff. As you begin to embrace this infinity within you, you can get out of most of the anguish of life by being free inside yourself, accepting flow, accepting that today you're here and tomorrow you're not necessarily here. One of the meditations that I'd like you to do as a part of expanding your awareness is to imagine yourself floating up through the atmosphere, into the stratosphere and beyond. And then look back at the earth. Now in your mind's eye, move the earth forward to some future date. Look at the planet and take a moment to see how the planet would be in, say, 200 years' time. Observe the planet with you not there. It's a powerful exercise. As you observe the planet continuing, evolving, children are born, events are happening, societies are rising and falling, love, mayhem, whatever. It's all happening and you are not present. As you observe the world with you not present, you can see the state of the planet's evolution when you aren't here. You come to an acceptance of the fact that being here and not being here isn't any different. You have contributed to the world mind. You contributed to the emotion. Hopefully you contributed in a positive way to the spirituality of all our people. You are a memory, and you are an eternal memory, so you will be eternally remembered. Not necessarily by the people who are alive 200 years from now, but in the Akashic record, in the totality of our human evolution, the collective unconscious. Your place is there. It's sacred, holy, spiritual. It's a part of all things. So by meditating from above, you can get to the point where you realize, one day I will not be here, and that's okay. So by not being fearful of death, you can make death a friend. In your meditation, you can go down deep inside yourself and visualize death as this grim little gremlin or dwarf that's rather bothersome, constantly running around and causing you trouble. Make death a friend. Get death to walk up to you. Get death to walk with you in life. That way you can put it to one side and accept it without any resistance. In your mind's eye, call the dwarf of death over and tell it you want to kiss it. Run your finger through the dwarf's hair and pull its head back and then kiss it. And when you do, bite its tongue out and spit it out and push the dwarf down and make it sit in the corner. Say, listen, you little tongueless dwarf. You sit here in silence till I call for you and don't bug me. When I'm ready, we'll go to the next dimension hand in hand as friends. Please don't take it personally, my biting your tongue out like that. But I need you to be in silence. I love you. Wait here. I shall be back for you one day. Half of the fear of change that we experience is actually the fear of not knowing. By now, you will already be, hopefully, in a state of not having to know. You don't have to know all the time. So if you don't know how it feels after death, it doesn't matter. You didn't know what life was going to feel like before you got started. So accept and pull out of the insecurity. Then pull out of the insecurity around the death of things. Nothing is permanent. Enjoy your relationships while you can. They may last a lifetime, they may not. Enjoy the place you're in while you can. It may last a lifetime, it may not. Enjoy the job. And know that when things change, they change to help you. They change to liberate you and take you to a different place. Don't hold on. And don't worry about things coming and going. If you try to hold on to a person, you suffocate them and they flee. Remember, love is like the 49 bus that runs down through London, along King's Road, down Oakley Street, and into Battersea. There will always be another one along in a minute. There's 2.5 billion people out there of the opposite sex. And if you're bisexual, there's 5 billion people to bat at. So there isn't any shortage of love. You can find another partner. Remember, the person that you're with isn't absolutely, totally the only one out there, especially if your energy's going up. If you have the energy of a slug in a puddle, I'm sorry, because it might be tough for you. But people are attracted to energy, because energy is life. Energy is the only real currency, the only real security. When you create energy, you create life for yourself. And in creating energy, you heighten other people's security. It makes them feel safer. So think about what you're going to do today that creates energy. In creating energy, you're affirming life. And people respond to that very positively because they're petrified of death. When people are walking along, remember, they're thinking about dying. That's one of their main concerns. Because keeping you alive is the main function of the ego. And it takes to its job with an enormous amount of emotion and anguish. So, what will you do today to affirm life? What will you do today to create energy? Is there a friend you can ring up and inspire them a little or cheer them up? Is there something you can paint today to clean, to freshen up? What can you do for your physical body? What can you do for your emotions? What can you do today that says, I embrace life? Get used to the idea of the planet's eventual condition with you not here, and bit by bit, the fear begins to back off. Say to yourself, I accept being here, I accept not being here. There's no difference in the condition because there's no high and there's no low. There's no life and there's no death. There's just a perpetual infinity within you. As you come out of the ego and you come out of the intellect and logic, you won't care anymore. It's only the intellect that seeks to live on earth perpetually. It's only the intellect that has fear. Within the infinite self, you can't die. You'll never be more alive than the moment after you're dead. It will be an amazement to you. One of the other things you're going to find out is how light you are, because the physical body is jolly heavy to schlep around. Every morning you wake up and you think, oh my God, I've got to schlep this 150 pounds around somewhere today. Gravity is heavy. It pulls you down to the earth and makes you exert muscular effort. If you've ever had an out-of-body experience, you'll know that when you come up out of the body, the first thing you notice is the incredible lightness of being. So develop that lightness of being. Be like a spirit, rather than a dumpy, heavy, physical ego. Be a spirit. Take life in a light-hearted way. Laugh a lot. Be responsible. Be ordered. Be disciplined. Laugh. Laugh. Remember that seriousness is a disease of the ego. When you meet people that are terribly serious, what they actually are is very insecure. They are deeply trapped inside the intellect. What happens is, over a period of time, they begin to buy their own intellectual cleverness. At the beginning, that works very well, and they see how marvelous they are. They can impress people with their knowledge and with their wonderful intellectual brilliance. But then gradually what happens is, there is no place for the intellect to go. It peters out. Einstein invented everything he was ever going to invent by the age of 25. The rest of his life was spent in a futile chase to find a force he couldn't find, called the fifth force, the unifying force. He died a bitter man. He couldn't get to God through his mind. What happens to people is that they become terribly cerebral, intellectual, and serious, and they try to make their mind their God. And bit by bit, the mind can't sustain being God because there's a limit to what the intellect can discover and know. In the end, they become angry and fearful. So if you really fear death, you've probably made your intellect your God. Take the mind to one side and tell it, hey, little intellect, you're jolly handy when it comes to working out the bank balances, but you're not God. You're just a mind, and there's a limit to how much you're going to discover in this lifetime, and there's a limit to your usefulness. So back off and shut up. Once you come out of mind, then you come out of stagnation, you come out of hatred, you come out of frustration. You go past the anger you experience when people don't see your mind as being as incredible as you think it is. You come out of the fact that people don't respond to this terribly arrogant mind that is swooping down on them from a great height. You become a real person. In the end, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to go from the neurotic aspects of the intellect to becoming real. Living in truth, accepting the truth, accepting what is real, not buying the ego's vision, not buying the mind that comes up with these enormous arrogances and makes itself into a false god. Thou shalt not have false gods, and the false gods thou shalt not have is your intellect. Embrace spirit. Embrace the infinity within you. It's beyond coming and going, beyond life and death. Step 25. Avoid becoming a guru. As your energy starts to climb, and as you begin to release the crud from your life and move towards the infinite self, you're going to become a teacher. You may not stand up on a podium and teach, and you may not necessarily write books that teach, or record audio programs, but you will be a teacher. Because you will teach by example, by energy. You teach others because you know the Tao. You know doing and not doing. When you become a teacher, I want you to be careful that you teach from humility, that you teach as a magnanimous person, not from ego. I've been in the sphere of the human potential movement for many years, and I've probably met 75 to 80% of all the most famous gurus, writers, motivationalists, psychologists, and whatnot. If they're on the seminar circuit, and they're well known for the books, at some point, I will have probably met them. Some of them are incredibly beautiful. They're human. They have weaknesses. They fail and they rise. And they're genuine. But a small percentage that are in the field are utterly, utterly grim, pompous, manipulating, hypocritical. And in normal circumstances, it takes all of your detachment and resilience not to throw up. I mean, I'm talking up Chuck City. Why? They raise their energy. People are drawn to them. Then they use that power base to sustain themselves. They become money grabbers. They become egotistical, full of themselves. Or they think that their philosophy is the only philosophy that exists. There is no one philosophy. Philosophy is common to everybody. It's part of our greater knowledge. You can't say, this is my philosophy. Or this philosophy is better than that philosophy. Some philosophies are preferable in the sense that they liberate. Philosophies that liberate are more useful to you and I than ones that restrict. But all of them serve a purpose. Restriction serves a tremendous purpose because it allows us to understand freedom. Manipulation serves a purpose because it allows us to eventually become magnanimous and free. You can't have one without the other. Traveling around and meeting the teachers, you can see how some of them have literally bought the idea of themselves being the God. So they stand up then, attempt to do God for people. They don't do silent, I am God, like I mentioned in step one. They stand on stage doing serious amounts of, look at me. And they couch it all with a fake humility and cheesy grins and phony displays of love. And deep down, they're oscillating extremes of yuck. So, as you become a teacher, be careful with your energy. Because you don't want to raise your energy and then come to the end of your life and look back and see how you manipulated people, how you used your knowledge to frighten people, to scare people, to maneuver them. Avoid becoming a guru. That's what this all comes down to. Don't become a guru, because if you're a saintly person, if you're a powerful person, the last thing you need is a bunch of people kissing your feet. You've got to be seriously imbalanced and seriously out to lunch to go for that. I appreciate in the Hindu philosophy they revere gurus, and I respect the ways of the Hindu, but for Western people, forget it. It isn't our game, sitting in an ashram, kissing some character on the foot. No way. Teach from energy. The greatest teaching you can ever present is your example. It's you as you. Be strong. When people say it's awful, it's terrible, everything is falling apart, you say, no, it's not. It's rather beautiful. And from this falling apart will come change. And from that, we'll develop more. Stand and teach from energy. Teach by example. Serve humanity from inside your silent charisma, your silent power, your knowledge. Teach people and build them up. And remember, you can't pick them up, because if you do, you're going to dangle their little legs in the air. You have to get underneath them and figure out who they are and what they need. So avoid becoming a guru. Teach from truth. Teach from energy. Teach from humility. So avoid becoming a guru. Don't be seduced by power and money and showbiz and glamour, because one day you'll drop dead and you'll be seriously embarrassed standing in the light of God, watching how you had this indescribable audacity to set yourself up on earth as a God. Don't use your power over people sexually or psychologically. Don't use fear. Don't rip people off. People on the path are often vulnerable, aren't they? They're trusting. Respect that. Take each person that's pulled to you, take them to the crossroads, kiss them on both cheeks, and send them on their way, wishing them Godspeed. That's the sacred way. Step 26 is physical discipline. As you probably understand now from listening to these sessions, the journey towards the infinite self is one of discipline. So it isn't an easy journey. You know, when you watch TV, people promise you the world. Send $39.95 and you can have thin thighs in 30 days, you can have this, you can have that. They tell you it's effortless. The spiritual journey is not effortless. It's a tough journey because it's the journey wherein you're going to wrestle the ego into control. It involves discipline. How much discipline you can impose upon yourself is up to you. At the beginning, you need a lot because the mind is tough. Later on, you can forego quite a lot of the disciplines because by then, you'll have gotten into an absolute control of your mind and your emotions. And you will have a very strong sense of that infinity within you. So the disciplines can be eased off. But without discipline, you really don't have much of a chance. So you have to agree to discipline, or at least some of them. I've divided them up in the next few steps. Steps 26 to 30 are the main disciplines you need. Physical discipline is understanding that this physical body of yours is a manifestation of that infinity within you. As your energy moves up, you're going to have to become your own healer. You're going to have to understand the physical body and learn about it and care for it. You're going to have to create physical disciplines in order to not only heal your body, refresh it, but to take it to a new place. You have to make it ready to accept a new power, a power that can burn you if you're not ready. And you need the physical discipline to calm the emotions and control the ego. The first of the physical disciplines is to understand, study, and know the physical body. I've asked people in my seminars to put their finger on their pancreas. About 50% of the people in the room don't know where the pancreas is. One woman put her finger behind her ear. If you think your pancreas is behind your ear, forget it. You haven't come to an understanding of this evolution. So if you don't know, get a book on the organs of the body and study a little bit how this thing actually works. Then you have to take the body into some kind of nutritional discipline. One of the easiest ways of controlling the ego is not giving it the things that it craves. So discipline means moving from a diet that is ego-related, unhealthy and dysfunctional, to a more rarefied diet where you're eating less and sustaining more alkalinity. Carbohydrates, fats, oils, proteins are all very acid. You don't need a lot of acidity in your body. In fact, the perfect diet is more than likely going to be 80% alkaline foods and 20% acid foods. If your work is very physical and you dig ditches for a living or whatever, then perhaps 30% acid and 70% alkaline. The alkaline foods are all the foods that don't satisfy you emotionally. Fruits and vegetables, that kind of thing. They're naturally alkaline. The carbohydrates and proteins are acid. So what you have to do is begin to reduce the acidity in your body in order to have a balance. As your energy goes up, you're going to have to become your own healer. You won't be able to schlep your body around to the local doctor because the doctor's going to come out of pure TikTok. There's nothing wrong with modern medicine, but in the end, you're always your own healer. The point of physical discipline is if you can maintain it, if you can begin to create a physical strength around yourself, your energy rises very quickly and so does your confidence. There is no one particular thing that you can do that is more powerful than physical discipline. That involves exercise, it involves understanding your physical body and getting into control of it. You don't want to be too harsh on yourself, too tough. Some people that have very, very rarefied diets actually wind up getting very sick. It's true, isn't it? Some of the sickest people you ever meet work in health food stores. What happens is their body becomes so pure that it reacts to everything. They become allergic to fumes, paint, toxins, dyes, that kind of stuff. They become allergic to the central heating system. They become allergic to the whole of life. I know people that have gone on extremes of nutritional discipline that have started off having tremendous amounts of energy because their body detoxified and became purer, but bit by bit, they come into the law of diminishing returns. Their body becomes so pure that it doesn't really have any crud to work on. It begins to react to everything, especially those pollutants that are part of modern life. And the people become hopeless. So the cure for that is to start eating a bit of crud, if you're so refined that you're ill and allergic to everything. Going on from nutritional discipline and studying the physical body, understand that you can direct energy and light in your meditations into your physical body to enliven it. And as you center within, its energy is going to go up. the cells are going to oscillate with more power. So be kind to it. Give it as much rest and balance and as many alkaline foods as you can. Don't strain it. The other thing that's marvelous for controlling the ego is fasting. When I first started on my spiritual path, I fasted for 2 days every 9 days. Then twice a year, I fasted for 5 days. I still fast from time to time. What's beautiful about fasting, if you've never done it, is it really quietens the mind. Eating is how the ego feels secure that it isn't dying. When you fast, the ego goes very, very quiet. There are loads of good fasts you can choose from, and you don't necessarily have to fast with a total absence of nutrition. You can have a juice fast, or you can have a fast which is just water. In fact, most fasts are better if you drink loads and loads of water, as it helps you detoxify. Alternatively, you can make a broth of vegetable juices and drink that. I take loads of vegetables, especially ones that are high in potassium, and make up a soup of potatoes, green beans, onions, cauliflower, parsley, and I boil it up and skim off just the juice and drink that during my fast. Fasting really helps you get into control. Of course, it works as a weight loss technique. However, it doesn't help you with perpetual weight loss, because although you might be losing a pound a day while you're fasting, when you start eating again, it's really easy to put the weight back on. But it certainly allows your whole digestive system to relax and release. If your digestion is slightly out of control, fasting is a great way of bringing it back. So try it. If you've never fasted before, try a one-day fast. And say to yourself in a sacred way, I'm going to fast on Saturday. It's good to pick a weekend or a time when you're not working, because you've got time off to concentrate upon yourself, to walk in nature, to remain silent. You could do a one-day fast, leave it for a week or two, and then do a two-day fast. Once or twice a year, try a five-day fast. If you have blood pressure problems, low blood sugar, that kind of stuff, you should get advice from a professional before you begin your fast, so they can advise you of the best way of handling it. Once you stop eating, the body starts to eat itself. And what it eats first is the crud. So if your body feels imbalanced, the simplest way to heal it is to fast. And while the body is busy eating crud, the mind is also quiet. So you can get in touch with what your body really needs. You'll know which vitamins and minerals you're missing, where the toxicity is. You'll be able to seek out the treatment that you need. Obviously, don't use fasting instead of proper medical advice if you have a problem. Use the technology that's available if you need to use it. But most everything that goes on in your body, in the day-to-day sense, is fixable. That's enough for physical discipline. Now, come with me to the next session, and I'll talk to you about emotional, mental, and philosophical discipline, which will help you with how you handle fear, how you handle emotion, and how you process your feelings so you can liberate yourself from debilitating opinions and step into a more infinite perception. Thank you. Step 27, emotional discipline. I've talked a lot about emotion in this program, so I don't have to go into it an awful lot. But here's a few things that I'd like to add. The tribal emotion is the tribal emotion. they're in their evolution. You have to understand and sympathize with that. You have to understand that they're going to be out of control, scared, pompous, silly, and you have to let them be without judging or criticizing them. You have to distance yourself from the tribal emotion. So when you see those newspaper headlines that say inflation shock, you don't get sucked in. In fact, if you buy the stupid paper and read it, you'll find that inflation's gone from 1.11% to 1.15%. And it's no shock at all, and it isn't going to make a blind bit of difference to your life. You have to stay balanced in a society where the governments and the finances and the markets are bouncing around perpetually. None of that stuff is getting any better, is it? So don't get sucked into the emotional lack, and don't get sucked into your own emotions. Remember this, when you feel negative, immediately nip that emotion in the bud. Extremes of a negative emotion are like a nuclear bomb going off inside your metaphysical energy. You have to control balance first. So as soon as you find yourself getting out of control, pull back, sit down, visualize yourself standing above the situation, standing above yourself, and look back at this lovely person that's you and ask yourself, what's upsetting her? Or what's he angry about? The little booklet that comes with this program is all about healing emotion and the reasons for emotion. For example, in one of the chapters I talk about confusion. All confusion comes from asking questions. You have to ask a question in order to be confused. Think about it. Confusion comes from complexity, and complexity comes from the intellect. If your life is very complex and you're asking yourself loads and loads of questions, you'll be confused. If you want to heal confusion, simplify your life. Take a minimalist approach, a less cluttered approach, and ask less questions. Just be and flow. Anger comes from loss. You've got to lose something to be angry. So as soon as you've lost something, sit down and figure out what it is you've lost and agree to lose it. Frustration comes from the intellectual disease of having to put things into time frames and little boxes that aren't necessarily reasonable. So frustration is a disease of not understanding your infinite self, not understanding time, not having enough patience. If you don't have enough time to do all the things that you need to do, it's a sign of your lack of control. It's a manifestation of the fact that you lack good boundaries. You have to set boundaries and get rid of some of the things that you've chosen to do or that you're obliged to do and pull back and get into control by eliminating the less important stuff and staying inside the actions that are profitable or pleasing or comfortable. Being a workaholic is a disease of the ego. Don't become a power freak and don't become a money freak. Get a life first and do the other stuff as much as you need to do or want to do. Everything in moderation. Back to emotion for a minute. If you're going through an emotional time, ask yourself, what is your opinion? You might say, I'm insecure, Stu, because I think I might be losing my job. Okay, stop and pull back. What can you do about it? The way it is the way it is. You're perceiving that things aren't going well at work. What's the next step? Action. Rather than running away because of the emotion, rather than being the little child that gets scared and flees, when you feel scared, when you feel insecure, step forward, not back. Write that down and put it up on the refrigerator. When I feel insecure, I will step forward, not back. I will immediately review the situation and take action. If there's trouble at work, what can you do to fix it? Who can you talk to square things away? The factory may be laying off people, but probably they won't lay off everybody. So what can you do to improve your performance? What can you do to fix the troubles? Well, first you can create more energy. But if that doesn't work, what's the worst that can happen? You're going to get chucked out of this job and find something else to do. So maybe the universe is helping you by releasing you from one dumb job and opening up the doors to find you something more creative and profitable to do. Maybe when you take a long, hard look at it, it's time to chuck the job anyway. You've been there too long. It's got too crazy. You're too involved with people. You've lost your respect. Maybe they've lost their respect for you. If you don't watch carefully, things get polluted. Sometimes you have to leave and start again for people to see you in a new light. So emotional discipline is not buying the popular emotion, not buying the collective ego concepts of lack, fear, insecurity. Who's going to provide for me? That kind of stuff. Not accepting the emotions that are nationalistic, the warlike, and staying inside the serenity, the infinity that you are. You're in flow. You're in the arms of the God force. You are the God force. So never forget that. And understand that if you take to this infinite self, your life will be one of perpetually not knowing and perpetual change. And that won't bother you as you've learned to hold on to nothing. So when your mind rebels and says, I don't want anything new, I don't want change, just step back and say, come, it's safe, come. Then make it do something it hasn't done before, or change something, Now the lounge is in the bathroom. And as you step to more and more energy, silent power, you begin to perceive other worlds, other dimensions completely. A dimension beyond the contradictions and limitations of the ego. Beyond desire, beyond feeling, beyond what you think you know, beyond the popular emotion. Gradually, by processing emotion and understanding the psychological technology involved, which you'll find listed in the booklet, Weight Loss for the Mind, you'll understand how to handle it. It isn't complex. It may just feel complex to you, because at the moment you may belong to your emotions. You think they're yours. They aren't. They belong to the ego. The infinite self cannot be insecure. Step 28, mental discipline. Throughout this 33 steps program, I've discussed the journey from negativity to positivity, the journey from ego to spirit, and a lot of that hinges upon mental discipline. Sometimes being very intellectual is a huge spiritual disadvantage. If you're very clever, you tend to dwell in the mind. It's reasonable to do so. It's pleasing to do so. It's the same as if you're very good at running. You may find yourself 6 hours a day on the track enjoying your abilities. But being very intellectual can be a hindrance, but it's not a death blow to the spiritual quest. If you're not very bright, take a moment to kneel down and thank the God Force. Thank it for not making you too intellectual. That's a great gift. In the Tao, they revered the disadvantaged. There's a strange concept which says the tallest tree is the first one to be cut down. The crooked, gnarly tree that's ugly and bent is of no use to the woodsman, so it grows for 1,000 years. The cripple doesn't have to go to war. He isn't required to build things or to perform. So the cripple in the Tao is revered the same as the gnarled, crooked tree. The Tao says, to remain whole, be twisted. To become straight, let yourself be bent. To become full, be hollow. Of course, hollow means free of stuff. If you don't have a lot of intellect, you're free, because the journey from ego to spirit is the journey from intellect to feeling. In a very general sense, men deal with copious amounts of intellectuality and less feeling. So their journey is one out of the intellect into feeling and beyond, into a metaphysical spiritual perception of the world. And in a general sense, women are more aligned to feelings, and their journey is really to quieten the feelings and go beyond their insecurity. It's interesting that we are required to be secure in a dimension that is intrinsically insecure. The journey of the female is different to the journey of the male. The journey of the male is one of outgoing, pushing, conquering, ejaculating outwards, winning people over, selling things. The woman's journey is generally speaking quieter and more nurturing, and that's why they live longer. Their journey may incorporate some of the masculine traits, but more often than not, her spiritual trial is entering into this physical dimension in which she's often physically smaller and weaker than a great chunk of the population, and therein she has to develop a metaphysical, psychological, intellectual security inside a dimension in which she's insecure. So the woman's spiritual quest is to process her feelings, especially negative feelings, and become a radiant light of positivity. The man's quest? It's simple. He's just got to close down the mind. So mental discipline for someone who's very intellectual is the idea of not making your mind God and becoming too arrogant. Somehow you have to pull out of too much thinking. Excess thinking is a disease. It's what I call overthinking on life. When you get too mentally involved in questioning and intellectual activity, it keeps you from touching who you really are. You're a feeling. When you depart this earth plane, you depart as a feeling. You do not depart as 21 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Intellect is useful because it can earn you money. It can help you study. It can help you remember things. But in the end, you're a spiritual being and therefore an eternal feeling. So mental discipline breaks out into several different subheadings. The first is you've got to agree to feel secure in a dimension that is intrinsically insecure. The second thing is you've got to cure yourself gradually of the disease of overthinking. So when you find your intellect going potty, stop it and start pushing your feelings into things. That is nothing more than visualizing the circumstances, let's say back at the office, and ask yourself, how does it feel? How does the sales director feel? How does this campaign feel? Because the God Force permeates everything, so everything gives off a feeling. Even inanimate objects have a personality. They have a feeling. How does this airplane feel? Do you think I'd get on an airplane and just wander along in the great crapshoot of life? No way. I look at the energy of everything before I get on. I don't get on if I don't feel all right about it, even if it means I'm going to miss my appointments. Once, many years ago, I didn't feel good about a flight from London to Switzerland that I was taking. I got on anyway because I was committed to getting there. Sure enough, going over to the Alps, one of the engines blew. It wasn't a life-threatening situation, because we just turned around and went back to London on one engine. But we flew about an hour and a half all the way to the Swiss border, and then an hour and a half back to London. Waited for 2 hours while they dragged out another plane, and finally we made the journey down there. I should have got off the plane, and I knew it before I got on. But I was scared to act. So when you know something's wrong, stop. Retreat, take a good look at it, and act. If you don't feel it's right to get inside the cab, don't worry about being impolite to the taxi driver. You can always give him a buck or two tip and say, sorry, guy, I've changed my mind. Act on your feelings. When things don't feel right, be careful. When you don't know what action to take, do nothing. Remember that and put that on your fridge. When you don't know, don't go. When in doubt, do nout. Nout's a term from the north of England. It means nothing. Do nothing. If you don't know what to do, wait. Build energy, clean up things, organize things, seek out more information, but don't act until you're certain. Think about this. If you operate out of feelings, you're never really going to make any more decisions. Decision-making for most people is an intellectual process. The fact is, either something feels right and you proceed, or it feels wrong and you don't proceed. Or there's a neutral feeling and you either don't proceed or you move very, very slowly and cautiously. So, either it feels right to marry Harry and you say, I love you, Harry, yes, I'll marry you Thursday, or you say no. If you don't know, wait. If it feels wrong, definitely wait. So you can see how decision-making changes from an intellectual turmoil to, hey, does it feel right? If it feels right, proceed gingerly, carefully, slowly. Keep asking yourself as you go along, does it still feel right? If you're an intellectual person, your mental discipline is to ask yourself 6, 8, 10 times a day, how does it feel? How does this taxi feel? How does this office feel? How does this shopping mall feel? Look for the feeling. Bit by bit, you can wrestle the intellect to where it is supporting you with its knowledge, with its ability, but it's not dominating your life or taking you up a dead end or into a place that's unsafe or wrong for you. In addition, the intellect will suck you into personal criticism. It will get you involved in judgment. It'll make you dissatisfied. You will have a triumph, and 5 minutes later, the intellect will trash that triumph into nothing. It will show you all the things you missed out on. So you make $20,000, but you could have made $24,000, and the intellect will bitch. And if you don't control it, it will drive you mad. So mental discipline is, in effect, wrestling the intellect into stillness. Your meditation disciplines, your quiet time, your introspection are vital components. Without those, it's very hard to get the ego or the intellect to back off and to allow you to feel your spirituality. That spirituality is beautiful. It's enormous. It's a vast energy, vast power, vast amounts of information. As you seek outside of yourself for the feeling of things, you'll gradually be able to replace much of the intellect. When you're coming just out of the intellect, you're always guessing. It doesn't matter if all the graphs and all the charts tell you this, this, and this is supposed to happen. There's lots of people out there who've lost millions of dollars because of some squiggly line on a page. What happened before doesn't necessarily describe what is going to happen next, but your feelings know. So rather than having to go through life guessing, which is what the intellect has to do, go with your feelings. If you're already deeply in your feelings, then purify your feelings. Become stronger. Get into control of your life so that your emotions are solid. Stand tall, silently, tall inside your feelings. And there's your discipline. Don't allow yourself to worry about things that are coming down line. So many people are fine. Their life is absolutely brilliant, but they can't bring themselves to admit it. If you look at your life, you'll probably find 3, 5, 20, 50 things that are absolutely marvelous. You have a roof over your head, you have some money to spend, a nice family perhaps, nice friends, lovely pursuits, your body's ticking along pretty good, you got a car to bumble around in. You know, what else are you going to need in this lifetime? What you need is serenity, not a bunch of mental drivel that moans and groans and makes you dissatisfied. You're with one person, and you're constantly wondering if it would be better to be with another person. Then you go to that person, and you find it's exactly the same. And then you're off to the next. It can drive you crazy. Intellectuality is useful, because it assists you financially and to learn. But too much intellect is a terrible disease. It brings on chronic symptoms like seriousness, which of course is utterly revolting. This life isn't serious. It's a comedy. It's an awesomely beautiful journey. But it certainly isn't serious. Serious is an egotistical concept. It's a disease from which I personally flee at the fastest speed that my little chubby legs will carry me. Let's go to step 29, philosophical discipline. Philosophical discipline is really simple. You have to develop a mindset that works, that liberates you, that doesn't generate negative emotion and insecurity, that doesn't involve too much control from outside of you. So you can read all of the great writings. But the central thing about the philosophy that you decide to acquire is that it has to have simplicity in it. One thing that I don't care for from amongst the sacred writings is that many of them are so full of dogma, rules and regulations. Every rule and regulation is a fence in the prison that you create for yourself. There's a huge difference, isn't there, between rules and disciplines. Rules are something that are imposed to you from above, by the government, the IRS, the church, your family. Whereas disciplines are something that you joyously take on because you know they raise your energy and quieten the mind. So once you understand that, you want a philosophy that doesn't have a lot of rules. My religion is don't have too much religion. There's nothing worse than a person that is dogmatic and full of stuff. In the enormity of the God force, too much stuff looks really silly. I'll never forget the very first time I had an experience up the other end of the near-death tube, where I actually saw for the first time the light of the God force. Now this isn't thinking about the God force, or a faint feeling, it's actually seeing it. The enormity of that energy is indescribable. It's exquisite beyond words. The love and compassion. There's no way to quantify that amount of love. It's overwhelming. What that experience did for me was, it made me instantly throw out about 75% of the stuff that I believed. At the time that I had my first vision of that light, I'd been working upon myself for many years. So I'd already liberated my psychology and my philosophy from a tremendous amount of crud. Yet standing in the light for just even a second, I felt embarrassed because a lot of my philosophy was pathetic compared to the view of the God force itself. So, move to the lightness of being, develop a psychology that works, and stay away from pomposity and arrogance and righteousness. Stay away from talking about your philosophy to other people. Stay away from trying to win people over with your philosophy or demonstrating it. It's completely different if somebody comes up and asks you something, then you can tell them what you know. But don't become a demonstrator of philosophical or spiritual wonderfulness. Develop a philosophy that works, and any time the system doesn't work, take a really long look to review what you're doing. What do you believe? What's in your philosophy? Bag it if it doesn't work. The second part of philosophical discipline is that I think it's important at least to study the rudiments of psychology. I don't want to intimidate you and make you think that you have to go to university and plow through endless dreary text. But you could study and buy books on the basics of psychology, because a little bit of knowledge really helps you understand why people act the way they act, why they do what they do. If you study a bit about the way the mind operates, you'll understand function and dysfunction. You'll understand why people are complex. You'll understand the various psychological manifestations of man. You'll understand, for example, how transference operates in people's minds. To put it in its simplest definition, transference is when the ego or the personality feels uncomfortable and the individual tries to transfer that discomfort to somebody else or something else. People that are psychologically crippled will tend to say that it's the fault of other people. It's the Jewish people. It's the Afros. Men are doing it to me. Women are doing it to me. The government's doing it to me. Of course, no one is doing it to you. The ego is doing it to itself, and that's why you feel restricted. In order to get rid of that restriction, you transfer it, or you attempt to transfer it, and load it up on somebody else. So discrimination is actually a manifestation of an irritated, insecure ego, and that's all it is. So by looking into psychology, you understand motivations, you understand what drives people sexually, what drives their dysfunctions, their compulsions. I suggest you study psychology because it certainly helped me in my life, learning how people are going to act given a certain circumstances. Human beings on the surface are complex, but once you go past the surface, we're extremely simple to understand. In the TikTok mind of the ego personality, there are not that many urges and traits that you have to learn about. Whereas everybody considers themselves incredibly unusual and different, in fact, 99.99% of all the people you're ever going to meet are more than likely 100% predictable, even if they're acting unpredictably. What's predictable is that they're going to be unpredictable. What looks like actions that are difficult to understand are not difficult to understand once you comprehend a little bit of the psychology. So if you have a moment, pick up a book or two on psychology. There are loads of them in the shops that are written in simple terms that describe archetypes, psychological traits, compulsions, urges, etc. Buy the little thin ones. That's always been my policy because it shows that the author can put their point across without waffling. To wrap psychological discipline, the name of the game is to have as few beliefs as possible, to have as little dogma as possible, and as few rules and regulations as possible. The name of the game in psychology is to have a psychology that's light, breezy, flowing, changeable, accommodating, and easily bagged. One glimpse of the God Force and 75% of your rules will go out the window. On we go to step 30, spiritual discipline. The central point of spiritual discipline is to remind yourself that this life is a sacred journey, that you're not a physical body, you're not your emotions, your intellect, your beliefs, your tribe, your sexuality, your religion. You're an infinite being that is renting this body from the God Force. You've come to experience and to transcend. The central discipline is transcendence. What will you do today that will assist you to go beyond the physical experience? What will you do today that will assist you to comprehend this journey better? Spiritual discipline is no more than keeping your eye on the infinite self, the God Force. One exercise I recommend is, every so often, when you find yourself in a quiet moment, close your eyes and visualize the divine light hitting you in the forehead and in the heart. Bathe your body in light. Just visualize it for 5 to 10 seconds, then stop. Then do it again. You'll find that in this simple exercise, you'll begin to pull more and more of that infinite God Force into your life. Spirituality is invisible. Never forget that. If you can see it, if it's dressed in funny robes, if it's up there to be looked at, if it's making a big performance of itself, if it's sitting there doing extremes of, look at me, I'm so holy moly, it's not spiritual. Flee. Spirituality is having the Tao in your heart. Embracing the little things, embracing the softness and the silence, being like water, flowing to the lowest place, the yin. It's not acting and becoming a showy person. It's not the boisterous, outgoing energy of yang. It is the process of becoming an invisible person. You can't necessarily see it on the surface. The trash man who comes around at 5 o'clock in the morning might have an enormous spirituality that you can't see. He is what he is. He is within himself. He's doing his job diligently and serving the community by hauling their crud away. So the trash man can be an incredibly godlike figure. Unfortunately, we tend to think that spirituality has to perform in a certain way. You can be rolling drunk in a bar and still be incredibly spiritual. Because at that moment, when you're totally sloshed, your brain, your personality, your ego, all out to lunch. And you're in touch with your spiritual self. Drunk in the physical manifestation of this evolution, but completely aligned with the God Force because your mind is gone temporarily. So be careful and don't get too stuck in these dogmatic perceptions of spirituality. Become the crooked tree. Stand at the back. Be silent. Don't talk unless people ask you to. If you have a perception and you look at a person on the street and see their life story right there, don't say anything. If you know the answer, keep quiet. Don't show it to people. If they ask you, give them a little bit. Just enough to take them to the next step. But don't dump 10 tons of your wisdom upon them, because it isn't necessary, is it? A little bit here, a little bit there, that's all you ever have to do. So spiritual discipline is staying inside the God Force, believing when you can't see it, knowing when you can't confirm it, being secure when everything around you looks insecure, being silent in a noisy world, being abundant when people tell you we're running out of everything. Stay inside that spirituality, and if you lose it, come back, pull back, organize, silence, meditate, pray, take a steam bath or some kind of nurturing body work, go on a fast, constantly purify yourself. Be humble, be brave, but don't be too showy. A lot of people that get a little bit of spirituality make a huge fuss of it. There's nothing more revolting than a person that doesn't really know anything, trotting around like they're the sage on the mount. If you teach, teach from a distance. Teach from your energy and then leave. But don't stay around for the applause. Be mysterious. Keep moving. Don't tell people where you are or what you know. Just give them enough to keep them moving along. That's spiritual discipline. Staying with the God Force and not using your heightened power for unreasonable gain or to keep the ego happy. There's nothing worse, is there, than going to one of those New Age conferences and watching all those people strut about. Grim. Absolutely grim. People have such a strange idea about spirituality. They think it's this holy moly thing, clanking little bells, putting on vestments and robes. As I said, spirituality is the garbage man who believes in himself, the bag lady who has nothing but she knows who she is. She's living an uncluttered life because she's sleeping under the bridge in Central Park. That's spirituality. When you become the simplicity of the raven flying overhead, the simplicity of the little animals in the forest, at one and at peace with all things, at one and at peace with yourself. Now we'll go to the culminating steps of this program, which are quest, fusion, and the initiate. Thank you.